The Holy Gospel according to St. John, chapter... I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. When the Spirit of truth comes, he will not guide you into all the truth, for he will not speak on his own, but will speak whatever he hears, and he will declare to you the things that are to come. He will glorify me, because he will take what is mine and declare it to you. All that the Father has is mine. For this reason I said that he will take what is mine and declare it to you. The word of the Lord. Please be seated. Well, here I am again, my semi-annual visit to Shepherd the Hills. Thank you again for welcoming me, and once again to remind anyone here who was not here the previous times, I'm Nathan Willard, I'm a minister in the United Church of Christ, with which there are strong ecumenical ties to the ELCA. Particularly notable, again, that I grew up in Iowa City, where I was reminded of how close those ties were to the Lutherans who seemed to be surrounding us on every street corner. And as I said before, last fall, you probably don't remember this, but because I've been applying for jobs and looking over old sermons, I do. My last visit here, I preached on the Epistle of James, which I said was a little bit of a joke because Martin Luther found little value in the Epistle of James. Well, to prove that the great organizing principle of the lectionary has a sense of humor, today I preach on Romans, the most Lutheran of all books of the Bible. But just so you have something to report back to Pastor Rosemary before we get started, I want to say that as I was listening to Josh, I was reminded of nothing so much as when I joined a fraternity in my freshman year of college. Because for all that there is a fraternity, and I encourage you to dwell on every negative stereotype that you have of fraternities as I say these words, because it's important, actually, to the sermon. Before we did anything in fraternity, in fact, the first interaction, officially, that any pledge had with fraternity was when a bunch of upperclassmen came to surround you, an 18-year-old, fresh-faced freshman, in a darkened room and said, having found you to be a man of good character, a student of fair ability, with ambitious purposes, a congenial disposition, possessed of good morals, having a high sense of honor and a deep sense of personal responsibility, we invite you to join the fraternity. And this is impressive in two ways. As I see, the first impressive way is that seemingly every fraternity member works for 4 years to prove them wrong. But also, it's really impressive to hear these things before you've done anything. Before they ask anything of you, they say, we have faith in you, that you are all of these things. And so as you go on through your life, in the fraternity and without, know that at this one point, someone found you to be a man of good character, a student of fair ability, having ambitious purposes, congenial disposition, possessed of good morals, having a high sense of honor and a deep sense of personal responsibility. Because in this chapter of Romans, this is not where Paul explicates the theology of justification by faith alone. That happens elsewhere. But here, Paul gets into the implications of justification by faith alone. If you listen, he said, well, having been justified by faith, we are at peace with God. And this is one of the, and we are remiss not to say, there are arguments about the translation, we are at peace with God. And we're going to go with this one for now, and you can bring it to Josh later if you have questions. We are at peace with God. That before we go out and embark on our lives as Christians, understand we are justified by faith. We are Christians. We are justified by faith. Not we might be justified by faith. Not we could be justified by faith if only it were strong enough. Not we might be justified by faith if we also have a pile of that bad word works behind us, but we are justified by faith. And so, knowing that, we are at peace with God. And yet we, like the fraternity boys, try to keep that at bay. We try to bring new ways to not be at peace with God, to ask, are we worthy? Are we believing hard enough? Are we living this out well enough? And it's a good question to say, well, what does my faith demand of me? That's a good question. That is a different question than, is my faith enough? Which I think is what we too often get into. Because as we go on in this passage, we are reminded that this peace with God gives us the ability to endure our sufferings. And sufferings here is a loaded word. It means a lot of things. I think that it would be fair to say, given that this book, this letter is written to the church in Rome, where the Christians are struggling against the Roman government and populace for complicated reasons that are not worthwhile to discuss right now in this sermon, that the sufferings could well be attempts to succeed, attempts to spread the gospel that may not come to fruition. They may be personal strivings that are not succeeding. This idea that because we cannot achieve that which we set out to achieve, there must be something wrong with us. The word boasting here is also loaded. We say we may boast of our sufferings and boast of the glory of God, and that is a counterpoint to the idea of boasting of our accomplishments and our high status. Here we boast in our sufferings because we're trying to do something. We suffer because we're trying to make efforts. And there's also the living suffering, the physical suffering and pain, and I'm not sure we need to boast about that. I think it is enough to live in that. But being at peace with God means that even as we suffer, we know that's not the end of the story. That because we suffer does not mean we are the victim. Because we suffer, because we do not succeed, does not mean we are a failure. It just is. We suffer, but because we are at peace with God, we understand that our trials, our part of the story, is part of a much bigger story. That if in our suffering, if in our travails, we can keep that memory of God's peace with us, keep that feeling of God's peace with us, even as we are discontented, that as we suffer, we can say, the story does not begin and end with me. It was before and will be after. And here is my part of the story, which goes on into the future. And that belief that there will be a future is character and endurance. Not being able to endure means stopping what you're doing. If you are trying to accomplish things in the world, if you are trying to be a better person, if you are trying to love others, if you have no endurance, if you encounter obstacles, then you stop. Your story ends. If you have endurance, you keep going. And again, it's important that we understand this suffering is complicated because we know on earth our lives have a beginning and an end. And so there's a point in which we're suffering, and enduring is not living with pain forever and ever because we wish to hold on to life on earth. It is understanding that we have successes beyond what we see in front of us. That they are in the future. The endurance that our story will go on if only we can find a way to keep telling it and to keep going. And this is all in the abstract. And I understand that. So I will bring it back down to our fraternity boys. Because let me tell you, until you have sat through a 6-hour long election in a fraternity that started at 10 p.m., you do not know what endurance is. You do not know what endurance is. Because you sit there and everyone has an opinion. And everyone's got an idea. And a bunch of them have no idea what's going on. It's like, then they come in, they just go in the fraternity and they're freshmen and they say, oh, well, I have a lot of things to say about this senior that I met 2 months ago and his fitness for a job. And I'm going to tell you about it for half an hour. And they say, man, there are 15 more elections after this one. But we endure. It's a little thing. We endure. We say, you know what? We think this has value. We think by the time this kid's a senior, he'll understand that sometimes you can just be quiet and it's okay. And you don't need to oppress everyone else with your opinion. And sometimes it's really important to talk. And it's endurance. The idea that in the future it will get better. And that's why we endure. And that has another meaning. The idea that in the future it could be better if only we endure, if only we keep our eye on the story. And that means hope. And that's what Paul says too. That because we are at peace with God, because we understand that we are good enough, we are justified by faith alone, we do not need to prove anything to God, then we know our story goes on. And in the future, it will get better. We'll bring other people into our story, and it will get better. As Paul says, hope will not disappoint us. Because all of this comes back down to things Paul's written elsewhere in his epistles and what he says here now. There's another word for believing that because life will get better, you should reach out a hand and bring someone with you. If we do not endure, if we are trapped in our sufferings, if we are trapped in our failures, we have no reason to reach out a hand to someone else and say, it will get better. I see you are suffering. Come with me. Because the word we have for that is love. To see someone else suffering, someone else in their own prison, and knowing, I have been there too. But I have peace with God. And I hope that it will get better. So come with me, and we can go there together.